We hardly need an ad at this point. You can just look to the front as you walk in and visually you see what you're required to do. Which is optionally purchase one of these wonderful t-shirts. Now, we've been hearing all morning that today has been a musicological feast. This is like the palate cleanser in the listings again. And our first speaker needs no introduction, as they say. Nick Teeberger, Senior Research Fellow at the School of Languages and Linguistics and Director of Parrot Music. Nick.
Thank you very much. Right, so we've been hearing about the need for archival forms of material, and Andrea talked about citation of research materials, and I'm going to talk to you about a particular collection that's quite well known in Australia, Daisy Bates collection, that has been sitting in the National Library, and it's in this sort of form. Paul Monaghan yesterday talked about a story that he'd recovered from the collection, but this is one part of the collection. You can see there are typescripts and there are handwritten manuscripts. The whole thing is around 66,000 pages, and the National Library has microfilmed all of that. And that whole collection was synthesised by Isabel White, Sally White, into a volume called The Native Tribes of Western Australia, in which she tackled all the different sections of the manuscripts, except section 12. And section 12 is the one that I'm concerned with. It's language, grammar and vocabularies. So all the rest of them are synthesised in there, but even she goes on to say that even though she's done an awful lot of work, there's still plenty of research to do, clearly, on the Daisy Bates collections. So this, as I said, it's been publicly available since the 1950s, and parts of the vocabularies have been used in lots of different ways. So native title cases in Australia, that is, they've been used to show continuity of contact between Aboriginal people and their country, for teaching resources, comparative work, language revival. And with all of that, it's the classic problem, I think, that we're addressing at this conference, is all of that research doesn't get reflected back into the repository. So it's done, the particular project is finished, and that added value is lost. The collection keeps going as a bunch of manuscripts at the National Library. It would be much better, and I think this is the sort of research that we're trying to encourage, if we can enrich those collections. So how do we do that? We have to have the collections in a form that can be addressed and enriched. So part of this section 12 is a collection of questionnaires that Daisy Bates had made up at the turn of the last century. And you can see they're sort of classic questionnaires with word lists with about 1,600, 1,650 words, and then also 193 sentence prompts. She had 500 of these printed and distributed around the state. And of those, we know, I think there are around 220 that got filled out. Now, they were filled out by different hands. They were filled out by station owners, by police, by all kinds of different people with all kinds of different language skills. But they resulted in this collection, which is about 25,000 page images, handwritten manuscripts, freeform lists, typescripts. So, heterogeneous collection of material. Ideally, because we have a questionnaire, we have a structure that we can use. We know that the questionnaire was sent out, it had 1,850 words, and so in principle what you'd think is that you would then get, for each language, some words in that structure. But it's not actually the way that it's shaped up. As I said, a lot of these have been used in native title cases. For those who don't know about native title, it's a process that Australian Indigenous people have been forced to go through to show that they have continuity of contact with the land. I think it's quite a shameful process that we've made Indigenous people go through, and it's been a big money spinner for people like me who can write native title reports. And to do that, you go back to the earliest known witness of a language, and often it's a Daisy Bates vocabulary, and you show that the language that people are speaking today has a close correlation to the language in these early word lists. Unfortunately, no central repository took responsibility. We knew this native title process was sweeping across the land, all of this research was being done, and the Native Title Tribunal or no other repository took responsibility for housing this enriched material, so most of it has also been lost. And this is the sort of vocab that you would set up. This is one that I did for a land clearing for Ngarluma. So you can't see it, unfortunately, it's a bit unclear, but basically it's a comparative word list. And you go through the comparative word list and you try and show how much similarity there is between the early vocabs and the more recent ones. But all of these spreadsheets don't really give you much of a link back to the original material. They're deracinated and decontextualized, and it's very difficult to make this do anything useful for you after it's served its purpose in the particular native title case. So being digital isn't enough. It's not enough just to make these things digital. You've got to have good structure, and you've got to have some sort of provenance that lets you know where things come from and how they fit into the broader research collection. So the problem is how to make thousands of pages of vocabularies accessible for ongoing use, and then how to annotate them and how to transcribe them. I think I'll just skip through. Well, one of the ways that we've tried to do this in Paradisic, and we heard some examples yesterday, Gary talked about finding some material in Arthur Capel's papers. Because we didn't have the resources to transcribe this collection, we just put page images online, so like this, with sufficient metadata to allow them to be discovered. So this is one way of dealing with a manuscript collection. It's saying, here are the manuscripts, here's some metadata to make them discoverable, but we can't transcribe them. And ideally, eventually, you would have some crowdsourcing way of getting them transcribed. Now, the Daisy Bates stuff, as I said, there's a whole range of different material there. She sent out instructions, so in the front of the book there are instructions on how she would like this material to be transcribed. She used the Royal Geographic Society instructions, so these are from 1892. These were instructions that were sent out to colonial agencies all over the world, and she adopted them, which I think was very wise. And so that gives you some sort of standard orthography, or at least a suggestion that there could have been a standard orthography. As I said, they were sent out to a whole lot of different people and filled out quite differently by the different collectors. But then she had them typed. So then what we have is the original questionnaires, which are handwritten, and then she had them typed under her supervision. And she changed some of the spelling because she used her own knowledge of the languages of Western Australia. So then we have two different witnesses. We have the typescript witness and we have the handwritten manuscript witness. And ideally, for anybody interrogating this collection, you'd be able to have access to both the typescript and the manuscript so that you could make some decisions about what was going on with it as well. So another approach to putting the Daisy Bates stuff online is being taken by the Bar Smith Library in Adelaide, who actually own the copyright on Daisy Bates, and they've been making PDF files. At the moment, there are only about 20 PDF files up there. You can see the list of them there. So it's a slow process. So what I've done is, with the help of the National Library, we've digitised the microfilms. So we've taken the microfilms and all the 20-odd thousand images, and then they were delivered. And their file names were in this form. So they were pretty much processed file names just from the process of making the images. The file names didn't have much of a meaning to them. And there's a problem with how you deal with 20-odd thousand files without good file names, because it becomes very difficult to keep track of them. The files themselves, so this is an example of a manuscript file, and at the top you can see it has 3876. And that's fine, that's an identifier to the National Library's numbering system, and you can identify this particular page from that number. However, in the questionnaires, you don't have page numbers on the document itself. So if you misname, so what I had to do was go through and rename these files. If you misname a file, it becomes a bit of a nightmare because it's just lost. Luckily, you can use image comparison software where you put your files together with the original files again, and you find out which file is actually the same as which other file, and then you can recover the context, but you don't want to have to do that too much. So the renaming involved taking these file names and making them into names which conform to the National Library's file naming schema. So 51 is the folio, 007 is the page number, the T is for the typescript, and then the and so on. So you can see that these are names which allow you for any file to relate it immediately to the National Library's catalogue. The collection is made up of files, vocabs recorded with a number of individuals. So we have the named individuals, people who provided the vocabularies. And so this is one point of entry into vocabularies, could be searching by people's names. The collection, the word lists themselves are typically a word and its equivalent, but the collectors decided sometimes that they would add other words. So you've got a word and its equivalent, or you've got a word and several equivalents, or you've got a word with an equivalent and then some English and some other equivalents. So you've got quite a mess of stuff to deal with, and then you also have extra paragraphs or pages of information. So there are lots of problems in the variation of the orthographies, the legibility, and the coverage per list. Some lists might only have 10 words in them, some have a couple of hundred words in them. So we're not getting coverage of the same data set across all of the vocabs. So one way to deal with text when it's in this form is to OCR, the optical character recognition software, but it wouldn't work in this case because the typescripts are just too poor quality. So I've had them keyboarded. And keyboarded into an XML form. It actually isn't that expensive to do. And I've decided to use the Text Encoding Initiative, which is a set of standard forms for XML encoding. It's got international take-up, and I think there are a lot of advantages to using the TEI if you're going to be doing any sort of text markup anyway. It allows you to create the document once, but to use it many times in different formats. So the idea is that having created it in one form, you could output it into a comparative database, you could output it as an EPUB or an HTML document or word processor documents, but from the same underlying form. And because there's a big community of TEI users, there are lots of tools and methods that we can adopt. Software like Omeka and Scripto, which know about the TEI. So these are established pieces of software where ideally, once we have a good data set of the basic vocabularies, we should be able to open them in these tools and visualise them and work with them. So they were keyboarded using double key, double compare. That is, they're keyboarded twice and compared to try and catch errors. And then you end up with something like a table. And for a word in the table, you have an identifier. So it comes, we know what image it comes from, what page it comes from, and its identifier. So for iguana, the idea is that you should be able to link from that word to the typescript, from the typescript to the original manuscript. So it's all in an XML form that looks something like this, but within that, you can do named entity extraction. So you can extract personal names, place names, and then have page numbers, questionnaires, and the unique identifiers. And if there's an ISO 639 code, you can put it in there too. Or you can put the institute code in. So, you know, there are different ways of identifying the languages. So at the moment, all the images have been digitised and renamed, and we have a metadata system in place, and about 3,000 pages are keyboarded. And the word lists are geocoded and mapped. So there's a big metadata schema underneath it, which is just a big spreadsheet that keeps track of all of this. One of the issues is what sort of protocols we need for dissemination of the Daisy Bates vocabs. Because, I'll show you a map in a moment, but it's over a huge geographic area, it would be completely unfeasible to go and try and locate descendants of everybody who was recorded by Daisy Bates. Which ideally would be the way this could go. But I think that because it's been published and available for 50 years and lots of people have dealt with it, I think we can treat it as an already published collection, and that's what I'm going to do anyway. I'll just show you a web demo. So this is the current version. So these are the vocabs. You can see the geocoding, they cover a big area around, mainly around Western Australia. Some, the ones that are out here in the bind are ones we don't have geocoding for at the moment. And then for each of these, you can have a word list, And these word lists, if you click on the word, take you to a map that show you that word in those languages. This is still a very early draft. And you can resolve to an image of the TypeScript. We don't have the manuscripts in this draft yet. So you can see I think we've got about 80% of the vocabulary is typed, and then we ran out of money, so we're waiting to see what happens next. So this is the first application of TI to an Australian language corpus, as far as I know. And what it will also do is just... TI or XML is just a good archival form of the vocabs. So it'll create a textual version of the vocabularies. It's a nice collaboration between the National Library and Melbourne University. And linguists. Once you do this kind of thing, you're testing the structures that you've got. So the National Library has a catalogue of this material, but because nobody's actually instantiated the links between the catalogue and the collection, I'm finding lots of ways in which the catalogue could be improved. So that eventually will feed back to the National Library as well. So we're making textual versions of the vocabularies. Because we'll be tagging personal names and place names, then we'll be able to have an API into the vocabs from personal names, so linking it perhaps to the database of Aboriginal people of Western Australia, which exists, or to People Australia, which is a National Library initiative. And, of course, with place names, we can geocode everything. I think it's going to be very useful for speakers of languages who use these vocabularies to have them in a form, ultimately, that can be output into various formats, so to mobile devices or whatever. One of the problems with the collection is that everybody uses a different spelling system, and so when you see this geographic representation of the vocabs, you have very different spelling systems. Even though they're patently the same word, they're spelled quite differently. So at some point, it may be that we want to provide a standardised orthography as well as the original. That's another point down the line. And then we could connect this to other lexical databases. So in Western Australia, there's a big database project on Noongar. That's the languages of the southwest of Western Australia and the Western Desert languages. And Gerhard Lavis's work in Albany in the very south of the state. So ultimately, if these things could all link together, you would have a really quite wonderful set of material representing West Australian languages, many of which aren't spoken by many people anymore, if at all. And then, you could link off to biographies of the speakers and biographies of the collectors. I think this is, potentially lots of interesting stuff. Because you've got it geocoded, then you can start looking at multidisciplinary uses of the vocabs. So biologists or geologists looking at a particular geographic area may also then be able to recover information from vocabularies which otherwise they wouldn't have found. So we want to output these in various forms. One of the interesting projects we've got in mind is the use of multidimensional scaling to show relationships between the vocabularies. And David Nash did some of this work for some of the languages of the southeast of Western Australia. This is a sort of a typical cognate list, a comparison of cognates between different languages, and that's a sort of traditional way of representing it. But what he did, and I worked with him a bit, is to take, again, this is a geographic representation of Bates and other vocabularies, and then plot the similarities between them using what we would now call a Levenstein distance between the vocabs, that is, how similar the vocabs are to each other, and plot that into virtual space using multidimensional scaling, but then to place that onto a geographic space. And having done that, what's interesting is that the vocabs, some of which we don't know the origin of, and many of which we do, then allow us to clump them into groups. And it was pretty interesting that using this method, we came up and showed what were likely to be the locations of some of these vocabularies, which we didn't actually have locations for in the original sources. So once we've got the Daisy Bates material online, we hope that we can set it up for some sort of crowdsourcing of annotations, because as I showed you, the vocabs are only one small part. There are a lot of manuscripts which aren't transcribed, and it would be ideal if we could put these online and then ask people to start doing the transcription for us. So that's the project. At the moment, it's still going. I hope that we'll be able to finish typing on vocabs by early, maybe middle of next year. I hope that we'll have an agreement with the National Library by then about how we can use this. And then it'll be made public sometime after that. Thanks.
Thanks, Nick. I'm not sure if I'll be lobbied or I learned something about the collection I'm responsible for. A bit of both. Any questions?
Possibly a suggestion. Are you aware of the Maertens Institute? Because they have a box of Dutch letters that the British captured at some stage, and they've been crowdsourcing the typing in. So they're getting people who want to volunteer their time, they've written their face where they can see the photograph or the scan text and then type in.
Right.
I dare say they'll be quite happy to let you use their software.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, of course, the National Library has a newspaper project, which is also very similar. I'm sure we might be able to do something with them as well.
The issue with those ones, now I feel like I'm being defensive in the same chair. The issue with those ones is integrating the delivery system with the correcting system, which a great deal of work has been done with newspapers, with the library's one, and in time may extend to other sorts of materials as well, which would be great. Any other questions?
Was there any problems with the routine in terms of quality?
Actually, no. It was pretty good. I mean, it's from a TypeScript, so you know they had a pretty good TypeScript to work from, and I gave them a tabular form to use. So there were problems where there was a mismatch of material. So if things didn't follow the questionnaire, we had to figure out a way of inserting hypothetical information, but that wasn't a big deal. Yeah.
Well, I can ask a question then. How will it integrate with your idea for delivery? How will it integrate with the library's finding aid sort of systems, which is EAD?
The catalogue that I've got takes the sheet notes and elaborates on them, so it's always going to be possible to reintegrate them with the sheet notes, which presumably are already somehow integrated into your system.
Or could be.
Yeah.
Okay. No other questions?
What kind of non-standard symbols were to be used?
Yeah, actually, there aren't many non-standard symbols. In fact, you know, that she uses the there's a male and female symbol. That's the only, but that's Unicode now too, so that's fine. Otherwise, the orthographies are all very standard, just using Roman script. So we're very lucky in this.
In your markup, did you use all stuff that's widely accepted TEI conventions, or did you have to introduce some tags of your own?
No, it's all straight. It's very boring TEI because it's really just a tabular structure. There's nothing particularly difficult. Yeah, very lucky.
the taking of persons and was also done by the typists?
No. Actually, yes, because it's usually in the header of the document, so the header has person name, geoname. If it occurs elsewhere in the document, we haven't done it yet.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Nick. Our next speaker, Kathy Bowe, will be speaking on behalf of herself, Michael Christie, and Brian Bevlin.